We have to coalesce behind Donald Trump, behind Donald Trump's message, so we can start focusing not just on the White House, but the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives. I've known Nikki Haley for a long time. And when I met her, she was running a failed dress shop. This woman had never accomplished anything in her life. And now somehow she's living in a mansion on Kiowa Island. I'm in Charleston, just down the road from here. In my eye, she's just trying to build her profile that she can probably go sit on corporate boards for the rest of her life, make millions and millions of dollars. So look, she's a cash cow for her own future and for all those consultants right now.
All right, folks, Super Tuesday is upon us. This is sort of like, I don't know, the AFC Championship. It's not the Super Bowl yet, but this is a big deal. And tonight, I think, will really change us from primary season to general election season, regardless of whether Nikki Haley wants to go out. Let's give you a quick recap. Delegates required to win the nomination on the GOP side, 1,215. Tonight, so far, 244 for Trump, 43 for Nikki Haley. Tonight, we have 864 delegates at stake. 15 states and one territory are voting. That's 47% of all delegates decided today over those 15 states and one delegate. By the time tonight is done, you count all the stuff from today, plus the February and the January stuff, we're basically at 50% of all the delegates. Okay. And then in a week from now, on March 12th, you got another 161. Another 350 on March 19th. Bottom line, if Donald Trump does as well as he's going to tonight, the math is such that by the 12th of March, whether or not Nikki Haley drops out on her own accord or not, this race is over. So she'll either do it on her own accord tonight or it will be over officially in 7 days from now. The RNC is going to have that vote on March 8th where Ronna McDaniel steps down and the new leadership gets voted in. We're well underway to the general election. So that's where it stands tonight, and I'll break it all down for you tonight. Make sure you subscribe now because you don't want to miss this. 10 o'clock tonight, this is the big event. Lots will be broken down. We've got Wesley Donahue. He is the head coach. He likes to call himself that, the principal at Push Digital. They are a major firm for tons of candidates over the last few cycles that have run major, major campaigns. He's going to help break it all down to us. What's at stake, what to look for tonight before we get into that live stream that I told you about. But before we get into it with Wesley, I want to tell you about two of the great sponsors that make this show possible. Here we go. All right, guys, longtime watchers of the show know about my friend Leo Grillo. He founded Delta Rescue. You can check out the work at deltarescue.org. Leo rescued a Doberman. He named the Doberman Delta. That stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. That became the beginning of what is now Delta Rescue. Delta Rescue is a no-kill sanctuary that for life, not for short terms, it's not a shelter, it is a no-kill sanctuary for life. They take care of malnutrition, dogs, horses, cats that need veterinary care, support. They let them roam free. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out all of those facilities, the work that they do, some of the great videos that show you the interaction that they have with them and the support that they give these animals. But it doesn't happen. Leo's mission, in order to be fulfilled, needs people like you and I to contribute $5, $10, $100, $1,000. If you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out the videos, but you can also donate. More to the point, if you really are an animal lover like I am and want to make this an enduring mission, check out the estate planning kit that Leo has on there and see if you can make Delta Rescue part of your life's estate. In a time of emergency or crisis, are you going to be ready? I know I am because I have a Patriot Power Generator 2000X in my house. That means when crisis hits, I can power everything from a refrigerator to tablets to medical devices to make sure that me and my family and my loved ones are taken care of. And if you go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, you can be ready too. As I said, you can power your refrigerator. You can bring the Patriot Power Generator 2000X into your house. No dangerous fumes, no noise. The beautiful thing about it is that it's powered off solar panels that come free with it. You just put the solar panels out, the sun regenerates the Patriot Power Generator 2000X, and there you go. No gas to bring in, no fumes to deal with. The Patriot Power Generator takes care of you and all of your needs. So if you're out of power for hours, days, weeks, even months, you and your family will be protected during a time of crisis. Don't wait for that time to happen. Get ahead of the curve like I did. Get a Patriot power generator and the free solar panel that comes with it by going to fordpatriots.com/Spicer so that you will be ready to take care of you and your family when a crisis occurs. Wesley, thanks for joining us today. I guess the first thing I want to ask you is today super? I mean, is there anything super about today? Or is this just, are we talking about it because there's a lot of states?
Like, I think we're just talking about it because there's a lot of states. I mean, what's today really going to matter, right? Like, we know that President Trump's probably going to run away with all of the states. If Nikki Haley's lucky, maybe some squishy liberals or squishy Republicans, I should say, will turn out and, you know, Northern Virginia to maybe help her in Virginia, maybe Massachusetts. But for the most part, we know that President Trump's going to run away with it. So the real question is this going to be enough for Nikki Haley to finally wise up and drop out of the dang thing?
You know, it's funny. I was listening to an interview that she did this morning, and she's asked repeatedly, as you just suggested, like, hey, you know, when are you going to drop out? When is enough enough? And she keeps going off on this, well, this isn't a coronation. There's enough people that want a choice. I get it. It's not a coronation. After tonight, we will officially have 49.81% of all delegates selected. The math is what it is. I think aside from winning the District of Columbia and the 19 delegates that went with that, at some point she keeps using the same talking point that people want a choice. Well, they've had a choice now for over half the delegate, almost half the delegates, and she's right. Not the person. I don't feel like anyone's asking her. They're asking her when it's going to be over. She keeps making the case. I don't think she justifies in any way, shape, or form the need to stay in.
Sean, I'm going to tell you something that I learned early in my career that a state senator here in South Carolina once told me. And I don't want to be crude, but I'm going to say it anyway. He said, in politics, Wesley, you only have to answer one of two questions. First question is, who's having sex with who? And the second question is, who's getting paid? And I think in this one, it's about who's getting paid. She's still raising a ton of money, Sean. And there are a lot of consultants still making a lot of money. People are getting rich by her staying in this race. This isn't about her winning anymore, Sean. This isn't about the math. The math has nothing to do with it. She knows the math is against her. She knows there's no way she's going to win this race. And she knows the longer she stays in, her political future is screwed. For me, I think it's those people that are putting those TV ads up and that are sending out all those text messages and dropping all that mail. People are making a lot of money from Nikki Haley staying in this race, man. And I think it's all about them if you want to know the truth.
Yeah, I've said this before. You're right. Once she drops out, all of the people that are getting 10, 15, 20% off of the service they provide, it goes away. And she's bringing in, you know, a good chunk of money. So they're around her saying, come on, keep going. One more try. But this is the thing that I can't answer. I've been doing this for 30 years, right? There's no 2028. There's no 2032. If she was auditioning for CNN or MSNBC, that happened a while ago. Professionally, I don't see how you go on a speaking tour and saying, hey guys, I overstayed my welcome. I showed you what a really good butt kicking looked like. I mean, there's I just don't get, aside from your point, is it truly is the consultant class that's keeping her in?
I don't think it's just the consultant class. I think it's also her. Look, I've known Nikki Haley for a long time. And when I met her, she was running a failed dress shop. Okay, this woman had never accomplished anything in her life. And now somehow she's living in a mansion on Kiowa Island. I'm in Charleston, just down the road from here. This woman is now a millionaire. She goes from being a unsuccessful entrepreneur, gets elected to office, and somehow becomes a millionaire. And she's become a millionaire because by getting elected, she's been able to sit on a lot of boards that pay her a lot of money to show up for meetings maybe like once a quarter. Okay. So in my eye, she's just trying to build her profile that she can probably go sit on corporate boards for the rest of her life, make millions and millions of dollars. So look, she's a cash cow for her own future and for all those consultants right now.
So tonight, she is sort of keeps talking about, she uses Super Tuesday as the benchmark. I need to go through Super Tuesday. Is tonight the end of it for her, or does she make an excuse to go on, do you think, if you had to guess?
If I had to guess, I think she probably still goes on. I think this is not a rational, mathematical decision for her. I think this is an irrational decision. I think she's got a lot of consultants behind her saying, stay in, Nikki, because every day she stays in, they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars, Sean. And I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I truly believe every time she loses a state, she raises more money. Okay, she's raising a ton of cash from the squishy Republicans that want to take out Donald Trump
and
from
the Democrats,
the swamp folks. I mean, look, we saw that the one place she won is the swamp. She's the queen of the swamp, and these people are continuing to fund her campaign and make a lot of people a lot of money.
It's funny, you know, there's a saying that a lot of us in D.C. have in politics, which is people can fail forward. You can literally lose a race and do better, make money, et cetera. And I think that's right. This is the, you know, fail forward. To me, I think the tell is going to be when she comes out, right? So after New Hampshire, she came out and, quote, tried to like declare victory at like whatever it was, 7:05. And it really pissed the Trump people off, right, from my conversation. And then Trump was like, all right, in South Carolina, he came out and bingo and declared victory. Tonight, you know, the polls, if you look, you know, Colorado's at 9, Minnesota's at 9, California will be 11 o'clock probably, Utah 11 o'clock, Alaska midnight. I think that they're going to come out. When she comes out, if she comes out in the 8 o'clock hour and sort of says, we're doing great and we're going to fight on, that's the tell that she's going to keep going. This is her one moment, I think, to take the spotlight and to figure an off-ramp out, because at a certain point, I think people start saying, I get you're still in the race, but mathematically you're not, you don't figure into this.
Yeah. It's not a mathematical decision, Sean. If she's still raising money online all night long, we could see that kind of stuff happening.
But I guess my point is, at a certain point, that equation changes. People tonight looked, these donors that you're talking about, and said, okay, Nikki, we'll fund you through the 15 states and one territory on Super Tuesday. There's 874 delegates at stake. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
After tomorrow, I think that most people aren't that stupid with their money. And they say,
I would hope so. I would hope so, Sean. But like, we're already past that point. Like, why are they still pouring money into it? We didn't have to get to Super Tuesday to know that Trump was going to win every state tonight. We have enough polling for those donors to wise up and say, enough is enough, okay? But like, what I was about to say is, you know, I own one of the top digital companies on the Republican side, and digital fundraising, we can see this money coming in real time. So throughout the night, she's going to be able to see in real time, are low dollar donors still funding my campaign? And I think that's probably where the decision is going to be made. If she starts to see that money start drying up tonight, then maybe she will pull the plug. But look, if she's raising $100,000 an hour, which she could do tonight, then she's probably going to stay in.
Yeah. It's funny. I remember when I asked a buddy of mine, Tim Pawlenty, dropped out after the Iowa straw poll several cycles ago. And I was like, so what was the motives? Why did he drop out? And it was someone senior on the campaign. And they said, he looked at the money coming in and he said, listen, I want to make sure I can pay you guys. I don't want to go into debt. Yeah. And now's the time to go. And the question is, does she look at those receipts coming in and say, all right, I don't want to be on the hook for any of this money. I don't want to disappoint you, my staff. I'm going to cut it off today, pay you guys out and call it a day.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the wise decision, man. But we've seen crazy things in politics. She can go and raise $5 million tonight. Who really knows? But, you know, as of right now, she's making irrational decisions. Her donors are making irrational decisions. And look, it's hurting not just the president. It's not just hurting President Trump, okay? I'm involved in multiple U.S. Senate races across the country right now. And I will tell you, she's hurting the party. We have to coalesce behind Donald Trump, behind Donald Trump's message, so that we can start focusing not just on the White House, but the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives also, because she's hurting everybody down ticket at the moment too.
So if somebody hears that right now and says, hurting them how? How do you explain what are they doing to hurt, say, a Senate candidate or a congressional candidate or anyone else down ballot?
The Republican Party is still very fractured, man. You see it, you know, what's happening at the top of the ticket. You see the United States House of Representatives, where they just ousted the Speaker of the House, and this Speaker doesn't look like he's having a whole lot of fun there. The party is still very, very fractured, and we can come together behind one leader, but it can't happen until we do come behind that one leader. And then I think those low dollar donors start getting more engaged again. People start getting more excited about our U.S. Senate candidates and our House candidates. And then we can, you know, coalesce behind Donald Trump and win this thing.
So let me just ask you, someone who lives in South Carolina that knows Nikki Haley well, just out of curiosity, what does she do next? I mean, as I said, I don't see any political possibilities for her, but if you had to guess, is it just, I want to go be a CNN contributor and sit on boards?
If I'm her, I go and get 10 board seats, make $1 million a seat and go sit in my beach house in Kiowa and have a nice, comfortable life drinking margaritas on the beach. If she's smart, that's what she would do. That is the dream life for most Americans, right? Go make millions of dollars a year, sit on the beach drinking margaritas. I don't know why that's not enough for Nikki Haley. It sure as hell would be enough for me.
I'm with you. I wouldn't even, I don't need to go for 10. If anyone's out there that has a board seat, I'll take one board seat, $1 million, and I'm out. I'm not going to get greedy on here. So Wes, tonight,
it's crazy. You get on a conference call a month, take four trips.
I tell you what,
it's crazy.
I'm going to throw in a second conference call to anyone who hears that. I want to one up Wesley on this. I'm going to do two conference calls a month while I sit at my beach house.
Why wouldn't she?
I know. So tonight, Virginia is the first state to close at 7 o'clock. What is it that you think people should look at to get a sense of how the night goes?
So, you know, I am here in Charleston, and the one place that Nikki Haley did okay was in the Charleston area. She seems to do pretty good in suburban areas that are surrounding liberal cities, right? Because you've got a lot of moderates out in the suburbs. You've got a lot of, you know, squishy Republicans. And frankly, she has spent a lot of resources trying to turn out Democrats who do live in those suburbs around these liberal cities. So I think what you got to look at in the Virginia area is obviously Northern Virginia around DC. I mean, she won the swamp. She's the queen of the swamp. So I would expect the suburbs around the swamp to do very, very well for her also. I don't think she wins Virginia, but when I look at it tonight, when you look at Massachusetts, obviously a liberal place, and those suburbs around the Boston area, I think those are going to be the areas where she does the best, where you find the squishiest Republicans and the most Democrats that she could turn out in a Republican primary. That's where she's going to do the best.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I voted today, I was the 106th voter in my precinct, which I actually thought was pretty high, but I bet you, to your point, a lot of these folks are coming out. It was fascinating to me to see the ballot. You have Ryan Brinkley, DeSantis still on the ballot, others that had already dropped out. And I wonder how many of them vote for either Nikki Haley or somebody else as a protest vote to Trump. The thing that's fascinating about Virginia and so many other states is you have two groups of delegates in every state, the at-large delegates, the statewide delegates, and then the congressional delegates, how they award and allocate these delegates. To your point about South Carolina, I think that she could do well in Northern Virginia and try to pick off a congressional district, because Virginia's rules say that if you get 50% or more statewide, which, by the way, now that there's really only two candidates, that's going to help, or statewide on a congressional district, then you get all of those delegates. So I could see her picking off one or two, maybe in Virginia congressional districts, but statewide, I think it's going to be a tough road to hoe, considering Chesapeake, Southern Virginia, et cetera.
That's right.
The thing that's really interesting to me, though, Wesley, is when I did up my little cheat sheet here today, right? I went through all the states and I did it by closing, how many delegates they had, and then how they were allocating them. Now, I know my handwriting's not great, but one of the things that's really interesting is in 10 of the 15 states, they are proportional, but, and I mentioned this with Virginia, they have a 50% threshold, meaning if you get 50% or more, which by definition of there basically being two candidates, one candidate's highly likely to do that, most likely it's Donald Trump, he's going to get all the delegates in 10 of these states. And that's a huge runaway. I mean, as I said, 47.39% of all delegates are at stake today. And if he runs away with this, I mean, California has 169 delegates. That's a proportional and with a 50% threshold. Texas, the same thing, 161 delegates. He's going to expand this lead. My guess is that he ends the night pretty close to 1,000 delegates, just shy of the 1,215 he needs it. And that's why I get back to the, when is she going to drop out? It starts to look stupid.
Yeah, Sean, but it was stupid 2 weeks ago. I mean, I'm looking at polls here where, you know, he's up 50% in some of these states, 71% in some of these states, you know, Minnesota, 64%. Next door, North Carolina, up 47%. Like, you didn't have to wait until you got to today or until the polls close at 7, 9 at midnight tonight. You know, you didn't have to wait. The polls speak for themselves. This thing's been over for quite a while. So that's why I keep coming back to this point that it's not a mathematical thing for her. There's something else there. It's either money or it's ego. But it's something beyond the math. The math does not add up for her to still be in this race, even as of this morning, much less when the polls close tonight.
I feel like it's that line in Dumb and Dumber where Jim Carrey's character keeps asking the woman for, you know, will they have a date or whatever? And she says, there's a 1 in a million chance. And he goes, so there's a chance.
So there's a chance.
Let me go back to what I was saying about all these 10 states that have the proportional but 50%. And just, you know, like Minnesota has proportional but 80%. I don't know that that's that big of a deal. And yeah. Tennessee has proportional but with 2/3 of a threshold. The reason I bring this up, and I think it's fascinating, is that it was Donald Trump's campaign team meeting with state parties saying to craft these rules, because the RNC rules say that if you go prior to March 15th, you have to be proportional. So what they did was they created a rule and said, we're proportional, but if you get 50% plus one, you get all the delegates, which is a loophole. But I think it's fascinating and not appreciated how sophisticated the Donald Trump campaign team was months ago. They were out working the refs, sitting down with state parties, helping to craft these rules that govern how the delegates were allocated, while Ron DeSantis and others were trying to figure out, should I get in? Should I not get in? And it's a moment like this where you realize how much that preparation paid off and how different it was than, say, 2016.
Sean, the Donald Trump campaign is the best run campaign in the country, to be honest with you. I'm working on a bunch of races right now, but I got to tell you, there's been a lot of articles written about Susie Wiles and Chris Lacivita, as you know, the two top folks running the campaign. Look, I'll just be very blunt with you. Because you've been in politics for 30 years. Politics is full of a lot of... You do not. You look fantastic, Sean. Politics is full of, let's say, lazy, unethical, kind of sloppy, unprofessional people. You know that. I know that. The majority of people that work in politics, in my opinion, are just very unprofessional people. Then you find people like Susie Wiles and Chris Lacivita, who are, in my opinion, two of the most professional people I've ever seen. I don't know Susie too well. I've been in a couple of meetings with her, but I'll tell you, that woman has got to be the most buttoned up professional operative I've ever been in a conference room with. And Chris Lacivita, who I've known for almost 20 years, is just an assassin. Yeah. That guy is a silent professional who, in my eyes, is one of the best political consultants I've ever worked with. These people do not screw around. They are assassins, and they have been planning this for months because that's just the way they are. They're planners, they're organized, they're buttoned up, they're professional, and Donald Trump made a very, very wise decision in hiring the two of them to run this campaign. And that's why you're seeing these things pay off right now.
You know that Three Little Bears star, the porridge. It was one's too hot, one's too cold, one's just
Goldilocks.
Yep. Goldilocks, right. So having been on the 2016 campaign, we were a hodgepodge. But we pulled it off because I don't think people expected us. We were like the little engine that could, the tortoise and the hare. It's pick your analogy, but no one thought that we could actually pull it off or that we were professional enough. In 2020, it went completely the opposite way. It went from being too cold to too hot. And it was like every grifter was attaching themselves to the campaign, trying to make money.
Yes.
And this time, you're right. It's almost like now this is the right temperature. This is a group of professionals who aren't flashy, who are responsible stewards of the campaign funds, who are spending time right, who are calibrating the places that they go and the allocation of time for the candidate. It's fascinating. Yes. This to me is they finally got it right.
That's right. These people don't play around. They are all business all the time. They're the just epitome of professionalism in an industry full of unprofessional people. And I can't praise the two of them enough. I've been praising Chris Lacivita for about 2 decades now because I think he is that good. And now he's moved over to the RNC. So you're going to see this go beyond the Donald Trump campaign over to the committee too. And then that's going to impact every other race in the country.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how he impacts, you know, there's rumors that he is going to come through with a scalpel and just start cutting people out. Actually, probably more like an axe and just notching it down.
That sounds like him.
Yeah. It does sound like him.
Yeah, that's a man you don't want to cross.
No.
You know, like that's what I said. He's like an assassin, man, but he's a silent professional.
He's a Marine. That's what he is.
Just that's exactly what he is. And I would put him in charge of any operation I was running. He's
all right, folks. During these uncertain times, if you're looking to secure your financial future, call my friends at Bishop Gold. Call 844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean. I did it. This is where you want to add precious metals to your investment strategy. So if you have an old 401k, an IRA, or just want to enhance and expand your investments, precious metals is the way to go. I called them. I had a discussion with them about my needs, where I was, what my long-term goals were, and they put a plan together for me. Now, you can keep the metals. They can keep them for you. They'll tell you how to liquidate them if you want to do that at some point down the road. But the bottom line is this. These are the people that I trust. I know there's a ton of commercials out there about precious metals and getting involved in gold and silver. Bishop Golds are the people that I talk to, that I trust for my own investments. I know them. I trust them. They've got the experience. They live by integrity. Call them at 1-844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to begin your journey with financial metals and get a free gift if you do that. So go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to talk to my friends at Bishop Gold Group. I want to ask you this though, because two things can be true at once. We acknowledge how great and professional the Trump team is this cycle. There are a lot of pundits that while Nikki Haley as a candidate may be flawed, are saying that her campaign is extremely professionally run. Do you agree with that?
I know a lot of the people running that campaign. She's been involved with John Lerner for a long time as her consultant, and he is also a very professional individual, but I can't get past the fact that they're still in the race.
Yeah.
Like, why? Why is she still in the race? And to me, money is the only answer.
Well, I think
Sean,
it's also can be personal
those
though.
People you're talking about.
Don't you think it'd be personal though, Wesley? I mean, I feel like at some point that she feels wronged and attacked, and therefore it's like, fine, I'll stay in. I mean, she has gone from a happy warrior who said that she wouldn't run against Trump to now saying that she doesn't think she can back him.
That could very well be the case, Sean, because I'm going to tell you this. Nikki Haley, and I've had run-ins with her my entire career, is by far the most vindictive politician I have ever met in my entire career. And I've worked with hundreds of politicians. This woman has the memory of an elephant. She does not forget any kind of slight, any kind of wrong, and she will do everything she can to seek revenge on people. She is a very, very, very vindictive human being. So it doesn't surprise me.
But what about her campaign team?
I would expect a little more from the campaign team. Like I said, like for the good of the party, that campaign team should have already gotten her to drop out.
Yeah, you know, it's
I can't overstate that. It's not just about the presidential race anymore, man. We got U.S. Senate races the fundraising industry is suffering dramatically right now. We're going to have a bunch of candidates underfunded right now, going up against an onslaught of tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars from the Democrats. And it's because our base right now just doesn't feel energized. They're not donating to our candidates the way they have in years past. We have to coalesce behind Donald Trump, behind Donald Trump's message, energize this base again so that we have the funding to take back the United States Senate and to keep the House. So it's beyond just Donald Trump and Nikki Haley's fragile ego.
I want to ask you about two other campaigns looking back before we move forward again. Yeah. You guys, your firm did some work for Vivek Ramaswamy.
We did.
He went from pretty much unknown to huge internet sensation. What do you think that was?
Well, as I'm the digital guy, so as much as I would love to say that we are responsible for him becoming an internet sensation, the truth is that's not the truth. It's all Vivek Ramaswamy himself. He is singularly the most brilliant man I've ever been in a room with. It's intimidating how smart the guy is. And the content strategy in that campaign solely came from his brain. He was obsessed. You know, he's younger than me, so, and I'm 44. You know, he's younger than me, so he grew up with a cell phone in his hand. He's obsessed with online content. He knows exactly what to say to get people energized, and he knows the way to talk to them. So that content play, that internet popularity you saw was straight from Vivek Ramaswamy himself.
Do you think, considering that, how smart he is and his past as a CEO, would he make a good VP? Because people like that sometimes are hard to play the Robin to the Batman.
If the question is, would he be a good vice president? The answer is yes. But the question also is he good on the ticket, and does he bring anything to Donald Trump that Donald Trump needs? And that's the question I'm not so sure about. I'm not sure that he brings anybody along with him that's not already a Donald Trump fan. I'm not saying he would be bad on the ticket. I know he would be a fantastic vice president, though.
All right, I don't want to keep going down the VP rabbit hole, but you are a South Carolinian. There's a lot of chatter about Tim Scott. What does he bring to the table?
Yeah. Well, first off, Tim Scott's just a fantastic human being. Yeah. I've known him for a very long time since he was on council. And I just think he's a very honorable, ethical, professional individual. And he's the kind of man that, you know, this state would be very proud of, and Donald Trump should be very proud of if he was on the ticket too. But yeah, I do think that he brings something to the ticket. I think he firms up a lot of the religious right side. I was at a basketball game this weekend for my son, and these two older guys were sitting in front of me. And they were talking about the presidential race, and one of the guys said, you know, Donald Trump isn't an angel, but maybe we don't need an angel. Maybe we just need a SOB as president of the United States. And I giggled. But what I think Tim Scott does, he is an angel. So he firms up that side of those people that are a little concerned about President Trump not being an angel.
That's kind of the Mike Pence role.
Plus the angels you're going
to
get.
I mean, that's what Pence did to some degree in 16.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, that's exactly right.
Do you think he helps with the black vote?
No, I don't. First off, I don't think the African-American community is going to come out this time anyway. I think they're going to be a very depressed community. I don't think Joe Biden has done anything to turn them out, but that doesn't mean I think they're going to turn out for a Republican Party either.
No, but I mean, if you take some of the margins,
see the lowest turnout.
I don't think that we're going to win it, but you know, if that's where we seem to be doing better and better with young black men. And if to some degree, if they can identify with a Tim Scott and say, all right, I don't think you have to win it. If you can pull in, say, Detroit or Atlanta or Philadelphia, big cities in battleground states, an additional 2-3% on the margins, I think, you know, isn't going to win it for you. Maybe not, but
he's got a great story. Listen, I grew up in Section 8 housing on welfare right around the corner from Tim Scott. He grew up probably not quite as poor as me, but in not great means either. And he has made himself what he is today, a vice presidential, at least top choice, right? So he's got a story that I think it's not just about his skin color and him being black. I think it's the story of I come from nothing and looking where I am today. I think it's very, very motivational, not just to African-Americans, but people that grew up the way I did. I'm very motivated by him.
I think it's funny to me because I listened to Donald Trump. He did a town hall last night at Mar-a-Lago, and he continues to speak in such positive terms about Tim Scott, his support for him, his work on opportunity zones and HBCUs. I was like, okay, this is a guy. The thing about Trump is that the tells, how often he talks about someone, the manner in which he talks about them, positive or negative, and he keeps bringing Tim Scott's name up unprovoked in a very positive way. So
Trump, he's the fighter. He's the guy that's not the angel, right? He's the guy we need that's strong and is going to stand up to people. Tim Scott, on the other hand, brings that message of hope and the future. And I think together they make a really great team.
So let me just ask you one last question about a former candidate, and then we'll continue to move on to the future. Yeah. What DeSantis came out of the chute. You've been doing this a long time, several cycles. So I think there's a great perspective here. DeSantis sort of felt like the Jeb Bush of this year. You know, he had this big super PAC that raised a ton of money. They figured out these ingenious ways of having the super PAC pay for things that a campaign normally pays for. He had a great record as Florida governor. He came off a big win, and then it was sort of like failure to launch. What is your after action analysis of where things went bad with that?
I don't know if it's anything that he did wrong as much as it was the Trump campaign did everything right. I mean, you say a failure to launch. They blew up that rocket on the launch pad.
Right.
I mean, the rocket didn't blow itself up. Chris LaCivita walked up to that rocket, planted a bomb, and blew that rocket up on the launch pad. I think the Trump campaign just gutted Ron DeSantis before he ever had a shot of even putting together a campaign. You know, I was quoted in the newspaper last year saying, you know, DeSantis is the future, but Trump is the present. And I got to take that one back now. I don't even know if he has a future the way that the Trump campaign gutted that guy.
You think it's him, though? I mean, everybody seems to say the campaign could only do so much. I take issue with that to some degree, but that it was him. To some degree, you can't make somebody more likable or more personable.
He's a little weird. He down here in South Carolina, he's a little weird person to person. He is great behind a podium. Yeah. He's great going after the press. Okay. But you get him on one-on-one with people and he's a little weird. So I think whenever he went into Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, where you have a lot more retail politics and it's not just about talking to the camera and standing behind the podium and attacking the press, I think it hurt him a good bit. And that provided the opportunity for the Trump campaign to come in and gut him.
All right. So let's go back to today. Obviously, the big story is going to be how big does Donald Trump win tonight? Does Nikki Haley drop out? Mm-hmm. But there's, as you mentioned, a lot of down ballot stuff. Yeah. Is there anything that you're looking at down ballot in any one of these states or any of these campaigns that you think is going to be important?
North Carolina is interesting. You know, there's some congressional seats over there, like that first congressional district that I'm looking at. I've actually got like some state legislative things on the ballot in Texas that I'm paying attention to also. I know a lot of people are paying attention to California, Sean, but that doesn't really excite me at all. I mean, look, Steve Garvey, there's no way he's going to win that race. He might get into the top two, but once the Democrats coalesce behind Adam Schiff, I don't see how Steve Garvey stands a chance in hell, California. So I know it's exciting for Republicans to look at, hey, we got someone in the top two, but let's just be real, right? Like,
well,
he
can
get
I just,
25%. But
I think...
Yeah, play devil's advocate. I want to hear the... What do you think?
No, I actually totally agree with you. I think this is the first time I'm going to advocate in my life that a Republican doesn't do well, that people don't understand that California is a jungle primary. The top two people move on. Adam Schiff, the guy, Shifty Schiff, the one that went after President Trump, is the leading candidate right now. He is helping, actively trying to get Steve Garvey, the Republican former LA Dodgers player, to finish second because he knows that if he goes into a general election and Garvey's the number two guy, that it's a cakewalk. If Katie Porter, the very progressive leftist, becomes the number two, they're going to have a dogfight that's going to cost a ton of money.
You are 100% correct. That is absolutely the correct analysis.
Yeah. I mean, but I think Republicans are so excited that Steve Garvey's going to win. They're missing the fact that it's almost like they're not in on the joke. The Democrats, or at least Adam Schiff, wants Garvey to win. Like, it's not that he's actually going to do well in a general. It's that he just wants him to block Katie Porter or Barbara Lee from actually becoming the other person that makes it to the top two.
I thought all the Republicans had already moved out of California during COVID. So I was surprised to see that there was even enough to get him to 25%.
Right. I will say we used to call them at the RNC orphan districts. There are races, congressional races that are going to be very tough. Places like New York or California that won't be in a battleground state, but are crucial to maintaining the House. And I think we've got a few of those in New York and a few of those in actually a couple of them in Texas even now. And then obviously in California, those are going to be crucial if Republicans have any hope of winning or maintaining the House majority.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty tough for the Democrats to take the House,
really,
to be honest with you. Yeah, they've got to win in some pretty crazy districts, man. I mean, look, you look at the Senate, which is way more intriguing to me at the moment. The map's in our favor there. I think we take back the Senate. I think we keep the House. And And at this point, I think we take the White House. I think this is actually going to be our year. Now, I was the guy last time saying that the red wave was not going to happen.
Okay.
So I was one of the very few people, when everybody was screaming about the red wave, I was one of the very few saying the red wave absolutely is not going to happen. This time, though, I think the map is in our favor and things are looking pretty for us.
Let me ask you this. When you look beyond Donald Trump, in 2028, 2032, you mentioned your thoughts on DeSantis and Nikki Haley. Who do you think is the future for the party, for the MAGA movement?
Ooh, what a question. I think Vivek could carry the mantle for Donald Trump. When we were looking at polling, which I shouldn't probably let cat out of the bag on internal polling, I will say that Vivek Ramaswamy didn't have a shot with Donald Trump in the campaign because Vivek Ramaswamy was the second choice right to Donald Trump in almost every poll I saw. So, with Donald Trump was always his ceiling. There was no path for him. But there is a path for him to carry on that MAGA mantle. And he was the obvious second choice for the MAGA crowd this time around. I think Tim Scott has done a phenomenal job once he dropped out of the race supporting Donald Trump. That was a very well-run campaign because he jumped in the race, he built a national profile, but he was smart enough to know when to get out of the race, throw all his chips behind Donald Trump. So, I think the two of them have a very strong future.
It's funny because Trump, again, said last night, Tim Scott's a better surrogate for me than he was a candidate for himself.
Because he's great on the stump. Yeah. He's just a very positive human being in a time when everybody else in the world is negative. Literally, not just politicians, everybody. There's just such a negative sentiment in culture right now. And then you've got this happy warrior of Tim Scott that's out there preaching, hope and optimism. And he's a bright light in an otherwise very negative environment.
But do you think you see this online. You see the sentiment online. I feel like we all say we want positive, but at the end of the day, to your conversation you had with, when your son was at the basketball game, the people at the end of the day, I still think on our side want a fighter and what you said, a mean son of a SOB.
Yeah. Look, I think right now that's what people want because they see things in the wrong direction and they think they need someone who is a fighter to turn things around. That guy that's out there being hopeful and optimistic isn't necessarily the guy that you want fighting for you. But that is a guy that is providing leadership and could be the future of the company. I'm sorry, of the country.
Okay.
I think you need a little bit of both.
Let me ask you, the last thing I want to get to is this. You deal with all this stuff online, the digital strategy. The New York Times there's a story that came out, faced a sustained wave of backlash because they published a poll that said that Joe Biden was too old, right? This story that's criticizing them that says, quote, they even asked this question as evidence of the bias, the agenda in their poll, said Jeff Jarvis, the Leonard Tow Professor of Journalism and Innovation at the City University of New York School of Journalism. Who made age an issue? They did. He's talking about the time. How do you see things online versus, say, differently than what we're seeing now in the mainstream liberal press?
I don't see any difference. It's a weird comment because every single poll, look, I look at polls every day. There is not a day that goes by that I don't wake up and a poll's dropped in my inbox. And every single poll that I have seen recently asked that same question.
Right.
It is a prevailing question among the electorate right now, not just Republicans, Democrats too. So I don't understand why they're getting criticized for it because every poll's asking that question because it's an important question.
Well, and it's obvious.
Do people think he's too old? And almost everybody does. So I think it's a legit question.
I do too. Wesley, I appreciate you being with us. Thank you for everything. We're going to, obviously, we got a long way to go before the general. So, we'll obviously check back in with you. I appreciate you being with us tonight. Folks, remember tonight, we're going live at 10 o'clock Eastern for the entire hour to look for results. You can watch us on the first, channel 347 on DirecTV or stream here on YouTube and Rumble. Watch us that way. If you sign up right now and subscribe, you won't miss it. We've got a great show. We'll break it all down for you tomorrow as well. So subscribe to all those channels. Plus, take 2 seconds, go over to Apple, Spotify, hit that notification button and subscribe there as well. Appreciate you all being with us. We'll see you tomorrow. If not tonight, back here on the Sean Spicer Show. Thank you.